This episode is brought to you by Worldwide Soba. Are you interested in making your own Japanese noodles or buying premium handmade soba, udon, or ramen noodles? Learn more at worldwide-soba.com.
Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. We are a member-supported nonprofit food radio station. That means that every single thing we do, from broadcasting 35 weekly shows for free, to bringing you exclusive content from sold-out food events across the country, to offering scholarships to high school students, is only possible thanks to the support of our loyal members. And we want you to join the club. Become a member during our 2017 summer drive to get access to sweet swag and pledge your support to the world's only food radio station. Visit heritageradionetwork.org/donate to become a member now.
Hello, welcome to Japanese. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deeper understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from our studio at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli and supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi, ramen, izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I will try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. My guest today is Jimmy Matsushima, who is the managing partner at EAK Ramen, New York, which opened in Greenwich Village in May. Ramen is becoming a part of American culture, but there are many variations of ramen that are still unknown in this country. One of them is EAK Ramen, and EAK Ramen is introducing the unique concept of EAK Ramen here in New York. So today we'll talk about what makes EAK Ramen so unique. But quickly before we start, Japanese is available on Heritage Radio Network website as well as on iTunes and Stitcher as podcasts. Please go to iTunes and Stitcher and subscribe to Japanese and also write a review. We appreciate your feedback. Also, if you have ideas about topics of the show or show guests, please let us know. And you can email us at japanese@heritageradionetwork.org or akikokatema.com. And finally, I'm pleased to let you know that Sumo Stew is back in July 18. And as you may know, Sumo Stew is a seasonal live streaming event of sumo matches from Japan while serving bowls of chankunabe and bento boxes and much, much more. The 15th Sumo Stew will be held at Brooklyn Brewery, 79 North 11th Street, Brooklyn, New York, on Tuesday, July 18th from 8 to 11 p.m. Tickets are available at sumostew.com. That is sumostew.com. And for Japanese listeners, there is a $10 off discount code. That is Kanpai10. It's K-A-N-P-A-I-10. It's Kanpai10. Now let's start a conversation with Jimmy Matsushima. Hello, Jimmy. Welcome to Japanese.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
So first of all, I heard you are second generation Japanese American. So where did you grow up?
Yes, I am second generation. I was born in San Francisco, moved to Orange County, California when I was about, I believe, 4.5, 5. My parents obviously moved here from Japan after they got married, and pretty much grew up in Orange County until last year, until 40.
Wow. So I'm curious, why your parents came here as an expatriate or that kind of thing?
It's a little interesting story, but my father was a Olympic prospect for archery for Japan. And he was actually working at the time at, I believe, a German camera company. And they pretty much sent him over here to the United States to pretty much touch up his archery game.
Wow.
And he came over here. He was here for a year and said that, you know what? I love it here in the United States. I'm not going back.
That's amazing. Uh-huh. Wow. Okay. And so did you spend some time in Japan too? Or not at all?
Not at all, actually. I'm obviously my grandparents are there, but I went there maybe a few weeks out of the year for a summer vacation to go visit with family, but never actually lived there for anything longer than 2 weeks.
Mm. Interesting, right? Like now you're doing a very Japanese thing.
It all comes back.
Right. Okay. And I heard that you used to run your own fashion business in LA.
Yes. I actually started my own company while I was in school when I was 20. Mm. And it started off as an import-export business. But also at the same time, I did a lot of exclusive distribution, contract negotiations with U.S. brands to have their exclusive rights for Japan, the Japanese market.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And okay. Yeah, I took the brands to Japan, helped market, helped sales.
Mm. Mm-hmm. So again, you never lived in Japan, but do you still have good, strong connection with Japanese society, community?
Exactly. That's all, you know, thankful to my parents because... they spoke Japanese to me in the house, and they made me go to a Japanese school called Asahi Gakuen.
Mm.
It was a school, you know, for Japanese, transfers over here that would teach the same education as the schools in Japan. First grade is first grade, second grade is second grade, same amount of kanjis, histories, science, and mathematics, all in the same Japanese language.
Mm.
And...
is it on the weekend?
Yes, Saturday only.
Oh,
I hated my parents.
Yeah, keep hearing. It's really intense.
Yeah, especially growing up in Orange County. It's a very Caucasian neighborhood. Mm. Right now it isn't, but it used to be when I was growing up. And everybody has Saturday off. They're playing soccer. They're playing AYSO. And I'm like, I want to join. They're like, no, you got to go to school.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so basically the parents who send kids to that school want them to be ready for Japanese exams when they go back. So I heard it's really, really intense.
Yes, it's very intense.
Right, and you survived.
Exactly. I did survive. And they, on top of that, they made me go to Kumon, which was Tuesdays, Thursdays. And then they made me take violin and Yamaha. And I was like just busy every single day. And
that's just
how my parents were.
Right. Uh-huh. Well, that worked out.
It did.
Right.
I have no musical skills, but it did work out.
Right. Okay. And that's interesting. The design company, I heard the EAK's cute design and decor directed by you.
Yes. That was one thing that I believe the Japanese companies trying to open business over here, they don't understand the concept of that, like where they feel that if the food is good, people will come.
Right.
But, you know, which is true. But also at the same time, you got to be able to market it. You know, what's the difference between our style and their style? But also at the same time, it's got to visually appeal to them.
Right.
Yeah. So that was the whole concept of the ramen bowls, the logo, even the name. Had to change everything for the U.S. market.
Interesting. Because I think in Japan, it's almost... you should not promote. It's kind of like flattering.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to make the best product and then people will come. Like Sony made the products and people will come. So Mr. Morita said that.
That's true. Right? That's very true.
Right. But here, first 3 months before everything's reviewed, does everything.
Exactly.
Design.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. So so how did you get involved in EAK ramen business?
So I met Mr. Tagawa and Mr. Sasajima, which both are... Mr. Tagawa is the president of GIFT in Japan, and Mr. Sasajima is the vice president in Japan.
Mm.
And I met them through a mutual friend of mine, which, funny story, is he owns... well, he's actually president of a restaurant group in Japan that owns about, I don't know, maybe 400 or 500 stores.
Mm.
And they have, like, izakaya. They also have karaoke boxes. They have yakitoria, sushi, and so they have this whole group of friends that's all presidents of, like, restaurant chains.
Mm.
And Mr. Tagawa and Sasajima are obviously one of those. And my friend, our mutual friend, brought him over to the United States a couple years back and said, hey, this is my friend Jimmy. I used to sponsor him, actually, with my apparel brand, the president of that chain group.
Right.
And he's like, yeah, I still keep in touch with this guy. And if you have anything you want to do in the United States, talk to this guy. He'll take care of you. And that was 3 years ago.
Well, that's a big shift from fashion to completely different food service business.
Exactly. But it was, I saw an opportunity where I can express what my views are and my images are through food and also the presentation of food. So I thought it was kind of similar because I did it through fashion and what people wore and how you know, you run an advertisement, but also at the same time over here, it was something that I took really interest in because Mr. Tagawa and Mr. Sasajima were both very passionate about their food. And when they told me about UK, because I didn't know about UK until then, because I wasn't too much, I wasn't a big fan of ramen because I just didn't eat it too much. I grew up on burgers and potatoes, you know, so and then they were so passionate about it that it got me interested. And that's where it just kind of took off from there.
Right. And you had the skill that they didn't have, or the kind of media exposure to to create a package to make it saleable.
Exactly, because it's something that you kind of grew up with, and you got to know the culture in order to adapt to the culture. You know? Well, actually, you got to know both cultures. So I knew about the U.S. culture, and my parents obviously taught me well about my Japanese culture, also through manga.
Right.
So maybe my perception of the Japanese culture might be a little slightly, you know, different, but I think I knew enough.
I think you're very precious talent because, you know, who can be in the middle like exactly like you, right, with the business skills, right? So, so what is your responsibility at EAK Ramen?
So, like my title says, it's managing partner. It's basically I create the direction. I actually adjust the flavor as well because I know what the original EAK is supposed to taste like. But also at the same time, I know what the U.S. palate is. But also I'm in charge of hiring, location, marketing, obviously, and just managing the overall direction of the U.S. EAK ramen.
Right. And everything you mentioned requires local knowledge and
exactly.
experience.
Exactly.
Right. So they got so lucky to have you. And so, yeah, this I heard it's the L.A. Shop was the first, which opened in November last year.
Yes, that's correct.
So you started working on the project.
Yeah, actually June last year in April is when I actually officially started moving around looking for locations. And our Melrose location in Hollywood was something that just popped up. And we took over the location, and that was just a quick turnaround. We got the keys September 1st. We opened the doors November 15th.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it was just quick, you know, we had to do everything. It was stressful, but it was very interesting.
It must be really stressful, too, to find a location here and open.
Right. New York has been very tough. I mean, I've gone through so much within this last 2-3 months that it's nothing compared to L.A.
Really? Yeah. So what's the difference? I'm curious.
There's a lot of laws and regulations that are very different, which obviously I did my basic education. I mean, I'm sorry, you know, I was prepared for it, but I didn't think that they would come down that hard.
Like you have to just wait, be patient.
Exactly.
And nothing can be coordinated.
Exactly. But one thing great about New York is that the people, I believe a lot of the quality of the people that want to work is higher than Los Angeles. I think it might be because of the climate. You know, they're more laid back in LA. So they're like, yeah, whatever, it's cool, you know. But obviously there's going to be great workers over there. But New York, I feel that there's the quality of the people are higher.
And the sheer number of competitors for any job position, maybe. So what is the concept of EAK ramen?
Okay, so EAK ramen, obviously you started off by explaining what EAK earlier was, which was great. EAK in Japanese means, obviously the direct translation means house style ramen. The kanji for ie is house, k is style, and it's ramen. Basically the difference between that is between all the other ramens and what EAK is that ours is a mixture between the Kyushu tonkotsu, which is all pork bones, and the Tokyo shoyu, which is chicken bones. And so we take the broth from there. And so that's the style of the ramen. I'll go into that in detail a little later, but basically the concept of it is that I don't think the US English speaking people would be able to pronounce EAK, which is I-E-K-E-I. And so I was playing around with the names for the United States, and they're like, how do you pronounce that? And I'm like, it's Ieke. And they're like, how? You know, I'm like, and I just said, it's E-A-K. And they're like, oh, that's much easier. And I'm like, okay, let's run with that. And right. Then it's just E.A.K.
So such a genius, because you never forget E-A-K. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Cute name, too.
Thank you.
Right. Okay, so, I heard that the Ieke ramen became a huge boom in Japan. Mm-hmm. So do you know the history of it?
You know, I've only studied about it just recently, but it's, you know, it started about 40 plus years ago, from a mix between people wanting a heartier ramen.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it's a mixture between, I was explaining earlier, is the Kyushu tonkotsu, mm-hmm. the Tokyo shoyu, and the whole part of making it heartier was to make it a little saltier, as mm. well as picking that all the flavors up by using a thicker noodle. Mm. Using a thick broth and a creamy broth, if you probably had tonkotsu ramen before, the thin noodles, they don't pick up the broth as much compared to using a thicker noodle. So mm. every time you eat, you get the texture of the noodle, plus you get a bunch of the broth in your mouth.
Mm.
And you can basically explode, all the flavors explode in your mouth, and you get a lot more of that flavor.
Mm.
So it's umami, the saltiness, the sweetness, and the savoriness all coming in at once.
Yeah. Right. Wow, that really makes sense. So, mm. yeah, it's almost like a pizza topping, the favorite thing you can combine into one thing.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, then I looked up my own, you know, research says mm. There's one guy, Minoru Yoshida. Mm-hmm. He was a truck driver,
mm-hmm.
and he thought it would be delicious if you could mix, you know, Kyushu style and Tokyo style ramen. And he worked at the ramen shop at the truck terminal mm-hmm. for 6 months and opened his name Yoshidaya mm-hmm. in Yokohama. Now, Yoshidaya, the ya means Japanese ye.
Mm-hmm.
So those everybody who started opening this kind of ramen shop after him had
exactly.
a ye. So that's a ye.
That's the origins of where the house came.
Right.
It's picking up his style, you know.
Right. Yes. Yeah, and I think one of them who followed Yoshidaya opened one in 1994. This Rokkakuya opened a shop in a famous ramen museum in Yokohama. And then the boom started. That's what I heard. And
that's very correct. That's I didn't get into that.
Right.
But that's definitely correct.
I'm sure you can write a book about Ieke.
Right now, I know enough about Ieke that I can go on and on and on and on. But
right.
then it just goes into, you know, I'm going to be just blabbering all the time. So
yeah.
I'd rather stick with
it. But it's interesting. But I didn't know Ieke ramen specifically what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of my friends in Tokyo, they didn't know either because
mm-hmm.
it's such a specific area, and
exactly.
ramen became more kind of a maniac mm-hmm. and a different kind of branches
mm-hmm.
to, you know, and so we can easily find blogs who've mm-hmm. been eating ramen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've seen those. A lot of people, they'll eat 400 ramen bowls a year, you know, maybe 500, because they have it for lunch and dinner, and all they do is go to different locations, taste it,
mm.
write about it on their blog, and it's actually good for me too, because it teaches me without even going there.
Mm.
And I can trust what they write as long as I know what they think about ours, then I can
right.
I can adjust to, oh, okay, that's what he means, you know.
Yeah, like yeah. you can stay slim and feel like you look
thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so that was an interesting concept with Ieke ramen,
mm-hmm.
but so the unique broth, you know, you mentioned,
mm-hmm.
so maybe you can tell us about, you know, the basic components of Tokyo style and
mm-hmm.
Fukuoka style.
Mm-hmm. So basically, Fukuoka style, you know, it started off with the pork bones, and they used the thinner noodles because they had a lot more kiosks, you know, so that they wanted to cook it right away. So the noodles, using thinner noodles, would cook up right away, boil. You know, you boil it, it's probably ready in about 40, 50 seconds.
Huh.
Our noodles obviously take a lot longer because
right.
they're a lot thicker. But so the Kyushu, they started off with the pork bones, the pork back fat, and obviously the way you boil and the temperature and the climate and everything changes the whole broth.
Mm.
So you get pork bones, you got to use them, you got to boil them in high temperatures, or else you're going to start getting a little funky smell to it. The Tokyo style, you know, you got chicken bones, so it's a little more delicate. You can't boil it too high. Mm. It's kind of, you're like simmering it and simmering it and simmering it.
Right.
So what we do is we kind of combine both of those. Mm. And our process takes about 18 hours to finish.
Wow.
So yeah, there's steps that we take to make sure that, I'm not a big fan of the tonkotsu where it has that gamey smell to it.
Mm.
You know,
The bones and the collagen,
yeah,
everything much deeper.
Exactly. Like, I like the flavor of tonkotsu. Mm. But when you actually go into the kitchen where they're boiling pork bones, you know, you get that, you know. So some people really like that. I'm not a big fan of it. And I think a lot of the U.S. people are, you know, they're not used to it, accustomed to that smell.
Right.
So I didn't want our ramen shop to smell like, you know, pork bones or like that gamey, funky smell.
Right.
So, you know, we made sure that there's steps that you can take when you are making your broth that actually gets rid of that smell.
Mm.
And I made sure our chefs stuck to that and made sure that it's the cleanest smelling and tasting broth that we can get.
That's a very good American mindset, right? Not to smell.
It's, you know, even ramen, you know, right now they're talking about slurping. They're finally getting accustomed to it, but it's still, you know, our first nature is to say that you have bad manners, or, you know, oh, what is that, you know, what's that sound, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing, I, you know, people don't say it, but, you know, the slurping, you get more air and more flavor. And I think you can avoid burning your tongue.
Exactly. I mean, it makes perfect sense. It's just, we need to get used to it, you know? Same with the funky smell as well. I believe if you get more into what ramen really is, I'm pretty sure a lot of the U.S. people, American people are going to like that smell eventually. But I think it's a little too early to go into that from the get-go.
Right. You know? Interesting. So, and recently, I read a book about wine tasting, and people tend to forget about retronasal smell. So once something goes into your mouth, people think that's the end. But then the smell goes back to your nose, coming back in your mouth, is a really big experience. By slurping, you can maximize that.
That's very true. Because when you get that umami and you get the broth, you get the noodles, and you slurp it, that slurping vaporizes the umami, you know, ingredients or, you know, particles. And that's what gives it that aroma in your mouth, that, you know, extra savoriness that you taste.
Right. And it stays, you know, your flavor, you know, the whole organs.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So, listeners, you should slurp when you eat ramen.
Definitely slurp.
Okay. So, how do you, you know, describe the taste and flavor profile? Like, you know, you briefly mentioned, but, you know, the tonkotsu, which is silkier and a more fuller kind of body, and, you know, Tokyo style, which is the chicken. So if you mix them and with the soy flavor, what happens?
So the original yake in Japan is, so it's thick, it's creamy, and then you get this sharp burst of saltiness, and then it flows off into umami. But what we did over here is we made it creamy, and then you get a hint of saltiness, and then it sweetens out at the very end. Because saltiness over here is kind of frowned upon sometimes. You know, you eat French fries, it's salty, it's great. But you're drinking soup and it's salty, they really just say it's salty or it's oily. And that's something that I wanted to avoid. So in order to do that, we kind of cut down on the saltiness in the broth as well as the tare, and kind of emphasize the sweeter aftertaste.
So sweetened naturally from
soup? Oh, yes. We're not adding sugar or anything. It's just straight natural from the bones.
Okay. So both chicken and pork bones have sweetness. Interesting. And maybe umami enhances sweetness, and sweetness enhances umami.
Exactly. Hand in hand.
Okay. And you mentioned tare. So basically tare, you know, for listeners who are not familiar with ramen consists of like four components, like noodle, broth, and the tare, and toppings, right? So tare, so we should define tare. How do you define it?
Okay. So so the broth basically is from taken from the bones. The tare is where the biggest difference comes in, because it's basically the black box secret recipe of every single ramen shop. The way you make that tare is always kept pretty secret, very secret, actually, because we can use the same broth. Say you and I, you know, we start off with the same broth. Mm. Somebody else made it for us and we use it. But if you and I try to make the same tare, it's going to taste completely different.
Mm.
And basically the tare is the characteristic that gives it all the flavor, all the whole ramen bowl, the flavor.
Mm. So you place it before we serve, you put it on the bottom in the bowl, right?
Yes.
And then, so that's kind of like a sauce.
Yes. Yes.
Right. And could be the soy-based tare mm-hmm. of the Ieke.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't know, you can't tell us.
I can tell you what the tare is, but mm-hmm. I can't tell you how to make it. Yeah, it's something that's our trade secret.
Right, yeah. So but basically it's soy-based and then add some spices, herbs, that kind of thing.
Exactly, yes. Mm-hmm. So basically our original one, it's called the Ieke. That's mm-hmm. the shoyu, the soy sauce-based tare.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have a shio-based tare, which is a salt-based tare,
mm-hmm.
Which is called the zebra at the shop. Just because we call it the zebra just because the soup itself, the broth, is very white. Uh-huh. It looks white or like natural colored. And we put garlic oil on top, so it's black. So it's white and black. And, you know, it's like, this looks like a zebra. This,
cool name. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. And you mentioned earlier about thicker noodles.
Yes.
And both Fukuoka, what people say, Hakata ramen, have thin noodles.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So is it uniquely developed for Ieke ramen?
Yes, exactly. Our noodles are formulated by ourselves. We have our own formula in Japan. Mm-hmm. That we brought over here. Obviously, we can't make our own noodles yet just because we don't have the manpower as well as it's not cost efficient yet.
Mm.
But we collaborated with Sun Noodles.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good friends with Kenshiro.
He's came on the show too.
Oh, no way. Seriously?
Yeah.
Okay. He's a good friend of mine. And basically, we were, you know, when we tried the ramen lab last year, we had such a great turnout that we really wanted to continue pursuing in the United States. And that's where, obviously, from there, we just kind of started with Melrose and Manhattan. But going back to our noodles, so Sun Noodles raised their hand and they said that they can make our noodles for us. And we gave them our formula,
mm-hmm.
obviously signing an NDA because he can't show it, share it with anybody else. But they're doing a great job of recreating what we have in Japan.
Mm.
So it's that thicker texture. It's chewy.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And then that allows the sauce, the broth and sauce taste, maybe longer because you have to chew longer.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. But we actually make it shorter as well because a long, you know, thick noodle and you're trying to slurp it. Oh, that's...
Splash on your face. Yeah. Some burns.
Yeah. I think I'm going to have to get bibs for everybody.
Right. Yeah. Right. Okay. And what kind of toppings are used for Ieke ramen, classically?
The classic Ieke mm-hmm. is basically nori, seaweed, then spinach.
Mm, but it's always a square nori, right?
Yes, exactly.
Why is that?
It's in Japan. That's, Ieke started the whole nori topping.
Mm.
I actually don't know the actual backstory of the nori.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you might know more than I do.
No, I tried to find it. I couldn't find it.
Exactly. So. I was just told that that's Ieke started with the nori. So maybe somebody else can educate me. That'd be great.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but it makes sense, right? Because it's nori and it's finely cut. It mm-hmm. can be more, you know, texture-wise, it's hard to control because mm-hmm. it goes all over the place. That's mm-hmm. my imagination.
Exactly.
And then you can just have a crispy nori. You can like, have a bite.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like adds umami, so mm-hmm. that's my imagination.
Exactly. So the original style of eating in Japan is you get nori on top, you get the spinach, you get the chashu. And in Japan, sometimes we use ajitama, but in Japan they sometimes use quail eggs, uzura.
Okay.
But also some don't even use an egg. And from there, what makes the eating of the Ieke style different is in Japan, it's people who want to eat a lot eat Ieke. So they always have a side of rice on this.
Gonna ask that. Uh-huh. It's crazy, right? Mm-hmm. Because I think I found a blog mm-hmm. and it was an interview with the one with the Ieke ramen chefs. Mm-hmm. And he said, please order rice because Ieke ramen is so rich in taste that mm-hmm. it's kind of like your side dish mm-hmm. is white rice. Mm-hmm. So rice is the main. And on top of noodle, you need the rice.
Exactly. It's a lot of carbs that you're packing on. But, you know, from there, you got a side of rice. But they also give you diced onions in Japan. So
okay.
it gives it, you know, it kind of refreshes the taste, the thickness of the savoriness of the soup. Mm. So you throw in diced onions and then it makes it a little more refreshing. But also at the same time, they use the nori from there with the side rice. You dip the nori into the broth and then you take it out onto the rice, and then you make with your chopsticks, you kind of make an onigiri and you eat it. And then at the very end, when you're left with rice and you're left with a little soup, you dump the rice into the soup and then you kind of finish it off like an ojiya and then you use the whole, you maximize the whole experience.
So that's the secret of nori, square nori, yeah. unfolding here.
I hope that's a secret. Right. I hope that's the backstory, but I just knew that EAK always had nori, and that's how they eat it. So I don't know which came first.
Now. Yeah, I think it makes sense. Right. Okay, so we'll take a quick break here, and when we come back, we'll talk about actual menu at EAK Ramen in New York. So please stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Worldwide Soba. Are you interested in making your own Japanese noodles or buying premium handmade Japanese noodles, including soba, udon, and ramen? Worldwide Soba is a Japanese restaurant consulting company specializing in Japanese noodles. Its services include teaching noodle and soup making, recipe development, staff training, and increasing restaurant and management efficiency. Worldwide Soba has provided consulting services to the Patina Restaurant Group, Samurai Papa, Brooklyn Ball Factory, and over 40 other restaurants. The next time you slurp a bowl of ramen, udon, or soba in New York, you may be enjoying noodles made by Worldwide Soba. They make them fresh each day and send them out to restaurants across the city. The founder and CEO of Worldwide Soba, Shuichi Kotani, also teaches classes to chefs as well as to the public, which are perfect for parties or corporate events. One of his most popular classes, soba making, is held every Sunday afternoon, and a tasting is always included. Learn more about Worldwide Soba at worldwide-soba.com.
Hi, I'm Jacqueline Raposo.
And I'm Ben Rosenblatt.
And we are Love Bites on Heritage Radio Network.
Our show is all about why and how we love.
Tune in every Monday at 4 as we talk about endings, new beginnings in relationships, about couples who work together and love together.
And what life teaches us about love.
So support our show and all of Heritage Radio Network's programming. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on that beating heart to become a member today, and we will love you forever for it.
See ya.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Needs, broadcasting live from a studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Akiko Kotayama, and my guest today is Jimmy Matsushima, who is a managing partner at EAK Ramen New York, which opened in West Village in May. Before we start our conversation, I have a quick announcement. We are running a summer membership drive right now. And this show is only possible thanks to member donations. Please join us to support our unique food radio and podcast programs at Heritage Radio Network. And you can sign up for a one-time donation or become a monthly sustaining member by visiting heritageradionetwork.org and click on the pounding heart on the homepage. And you can also find membership gifts as t-shirts and drink koozies. So thank you so much. So what kind of EAK ramen do you serve? You mentioned earlier zebra, but you have other interesting menu items.
Exactly. So we basically have three different kinds of tare that we use right now, which is obviously in-house secret, I guess. But it's shoyu-based, soy sauce-based, shio-based, which is salt-based, and miso-based, bean paste, obviously.
Right. So the original one is only soy-bei.
Yes.
So shio and miso are the original.
Exactly. So what we came up with is that we have the shoyu, which is the EAK ramen. The original one is shoyu-based. Zebra, like I told you earlier, kind of got into that backstory about why the name came up. But it's shio-based, which is salt. And then we also have, the miso-base, which is, we call it the oh-so-hot.
Okay.
Because it's spicy miso.
Okay. So, and I also found the vegan noodle.
Yes.
Which is, how do you do that?
So when we came over here, it was to the United States. It was something that I said that we really need to come up with because we have such a big vegan and vegetarian population over here that some people are going to want to eat ramen without having meat. So our vegetarian ramen, which is offered in LA and in New York, is the Go Green ramen. And so it's basically the soy milk based, and we use vegetables only for the broth. But on the Go Green, the vegetarian one, we have an egg in there. So, you know, some people might not want it, some people want it, but the vegan ramen that we serve over here, which is called the V Garden, it's almost like a ratatouille. And basically it's all vegetables, only vegetables. We use thin noodles because it goes better with the broth. And it's something that we completely made over here. We didn't ask Japan for their help, the original shops in Japan. We came over here and basically we need to sit down and do some R&D. And we came up with vegetarian and vegan.
Nice. Awesome. Yeah, sometimes, you know, I'm not sure of other people, but sometimes steakhouse could be intimidating. And like really strong, gutsy ramen place scares me to go in just by myself. So like the vegan style makes me feel like, oh, that could be my place. Yeah, it's kind of like inviting to a lot of people, like women as well.
Exactly. It was that's where it kind of started up as well, is that the conception of ramen shops is that it's kind of hard to go in as a female by yourself. And we wanted to make the place in the United States very clean, very inviting, very welcoming, and as well as the menu being welcoming as well. So we, besides the vegan ramen, we also offer a lot of vegan dishes. We have we have a homemade ginger gyoza, which is not vegan, obviously, but because it has pork in it. But we kind of elaborated from that and kind of dished off into making tofu gyoza. So it's completely vegan. We use vegetable oil only, and you know, everything's, we use no eggs, nothing into the skin itself. So we're vegan friendly. Actually, we have a superfood salad, which is baby spinach, kale, as well as hijiki, seaweed in Japan.
Awesome. Yeah, I think we had a guest a couple of weeks ago about the, you know, the vegan sushi. And I think all those vegetarian trend is becoming more mainstream. So I think that's a very unique, interesting concept. Okay, so by the way, who are your customers?
Okay, our basic demographics of our customers are in Japan, they're usually students because they're the most hungriest. So that's why they have the rice bowl on the side.
Right.
You know, it's like you can eat it this way and that way. But over here, we have it cleaner. But obviously, we have a more sophisticated crowd. Early 20s up until actually into their 50s. And we have families coming in. We have gentlemen coming in by themselves. We have ladies coming in by themselves, groups of ladies, as well as groups of men. So it's actually, we're actually appealing to a very wide range of crowds right now. And it's actually very interesting for me to be at the shop, watching people, talking to people, and how welcoming they are for the whole ramen scene.
In the location, you have a great location, right? It's like gathers everybody. Young to old, to residents, to office workers.
Exactly, yes. Right. We were fortunate enough to find that location. So I think it's been playing out really well.
Yeah, and it's surrounded by other nice restaurants and cafes. So people pass by like, oh, what is this?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. And so who's the chef, by the way?
His name's Keisuke Ando. He is one of the main soup makers for the original group in Japan. And I definitely said that I need the best soup maker to come over here. And so we flew him out here last October. And since then, him and I have just been doing a lot of R&D every single day, eating ramen every day, checking the soup, making sure everybody can make the same one. And yeah, so it's Keisuke Ando. He's our main chef. I don't think EAK would be around without him.
Interesting that, you know, I'm sure his mindset was Japanese. market mindset, right? Mm-hmm. So did you come across any challenges?
Yeah, we actually got into the arguments a lot because he has a conception of what EAK style in Japan is originally supposed to be like. And I'm asking him to do something completely different, you know. Obviously, well, it's the same direction, but a little different, you know. And he had to adjust to what the U.S. needs were, as well as what I'm telling him to do. And we just went back and forth. And he's like, this is too salty. I'm telling him, it's too salty. And he's like, no, this is perfect. It's still not even salty enough for Japan. I'm like, no, it's too salty. And we just kept going back and forth. And but I think I took him around to a lot of different places, ramen shops, new American food, Italian, French, and we went around eating everything. And I think he finally understood what I meant by the U.S. is not as salty as Japan.
That is interesting. Mm-hmm. Because one time, you know, I think I had a conversation with Mr. Morimoto, Masaharu Morimoto, and he said, you have to make miso soup a little saltier here. Because in Japan, people have rounds and rounds of sips, but here, you know, if you have the first sip not salty enough, people don't drink it. So there's like a other way to look at it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mr. Morimoto makes perfect sense. I mean, you know, you have a small bowl of soup, miso soup. Yeah, I actually like my miso soup saltier.
That's right.
But if I'm looking at a big bowl of ramen, and I'm thinking, that's a long journey to finish that bowl,
right,
if it's too salty. So, I think there are a lot of views about what saltiness is. We have a lot of posters in our shop that I write little comments and ramen knowledge. I write Ramen 101. And one of those posters is, it's not salty, it's savory. So it's just because I get a lot of opinions from customers that it's still salty, you know.
Right.
But Japanese people, and they say it's not enough.
Because I think Western cuisine tend to be more fat-based versus salt-based in Japan.
Exactly.
So that really makes sense. Okay, so, well, so you found the middle point.
Exactly.
Right, Keisuke. Right. Okay, and so how do you predict the future of ramen in the U.S.?
I think it's going to keep expanding. It's going to jump out from, you know, obviously big cities like New York and L.A., you know, other cities. We got Chicago, you know, I actually am looking at Memphis. Miami's a little hot, but still, you know, we got places like Portland that's blowing up right now, Seattle, you know, Texas, Houston and Dallas. I mean, the ramen scene over there is just getting bigger and bigger.
Right.
So I think a lot of the cultures, regional cultures in the United States are welcoming the whole, I don't really want to call it a trend, but it's exploding enough that people are taking interest in it and they're giving it a chance.
But why do you think it's becoming so popular?
I believe the American palate has been changing because we're so diversified here that, you know, you're missing out if you're only sticking to your own country's food, you know. Because there's Japantown everywhere, Chinatown, Koreatown, you know, you got Little Italy everywhere, you got Little Bangkok, you know, you got Greece, you know, we got Little Ethiopia in LA. And basically, if you don't give it a try, I think you're missing out on the whole foods of the world. And I think a lot of people are looking outside their boundaries and giving those different cultural foods a try. And I think one of those things is that they thought that, I believe, ramen is such a comfort food, as well as it's fast food as well. It's quick, it's easy, but also at the same time, it's something that they don't offer that taste, that complicated taste in the United States. So I think it's something that they're just like, oh, what is this?
Right. And I mean, hamburger takes at McDonald's how many seconds, right? Mm-hmm. But you'd spend 18 hours to make your ramen.
Exactly.
Right. And one thing I noticed, that the beginning of this ramen boom, American chefs who are trained at fine dining restaurants really decided to open ramen shops. So that may be something that, you know, culinary depths of ramen may be appealing.
That's definitely a very good view of that, because it's definitely true. Like you just mentioned, our soup broth takes 18 hours. Mm-hmm. The tare is something, it's a real, it's a chemistry, you know. You sit there and you, it's, there's so much that goes into that little amount of sauce that I don't think a lot of people will ever realize what goes into ramen. So I think that's why I think Italian and French chefs definitely took interest in it, because it's so interesting and complicated and there's so much depth to it. And so many different ways to make the same tare that I think it's just fun to them.
Right. So it's, like you said, it's a fast food, comfort food, but chef's creative mind stimulator. So that's ramen. Right. So what's your plan for the future?
Well, our plan is to just keep on going, opening shops, shop after shop, just because we want to spread what EAK is all about. And we actually want to educate the U.S. population about what, how there's different regional ramens, as well as what makes ours a little different. But also at the same time, we don't, we're not going to go down to try and make, you know, we're going to have like a central kitchen, everything's frozen. We don't want to do that. We want to make it regional. So we want to adapt to each regional culture, but also introduce our real EAK, the classic EAK, but also add menus like vegan ramens, vegetarian ramens. Or, you know, depending on the region, I might add something else. I'm not even sure yet, because I haven't decided on a region.
Right.
But, yeah, so we want to adapt, but also at the same time, spread what EAK is all about to the world.
And the local pork and chicken.
Yes.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay, great. So, good luck.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us today, Dream.
Thank you.
Okay, so listeners, if you'd like to know more about EAK Ramen, please go to EAK Ramen. It's eakramen.com. And if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for guests or topics of the show, please contact us at japanneeds@heritageradionetwork.org or kikokatema.com. And Japan Eats is live at 3 p.m. on Mondays and always available at heritageradionetwork.org, iTunes, and Stitcher Podcasts. And today's show was made possible by Worldwide Soba, and our engineer is Vitor Harsh. Thank you for listening. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.